Okay, I wasn't quite aware of how much mindfulness is flavour of the month around here. I guess that this mindfulness, this day I'm going to do at the end of the month, could also be on the theme of mindfulness. But if people are thinking there's just too much mindfulness around here, I don't know, because in a way, mindfulness and Buddhism, or mindfulness and the Dharma, are really the same thing. I mean, the mindfulness is just the Buddhist life put in terms of the practice that you do, really. The practice that you do to awaken, whatever you want to call it, is to become aware, isn't it? It's just to become aware. And what the Dharma does, what the Buddha has done in starting things off, is to give us a whole load of guidelines as to what to do with that awareness. You know, it just introduces us to our own mind and gives us lots of tools to use in the project of awakening, which he realised. So that seems to be, you know, mindfulness is Buddhism, essentially. I've got a few notes here. So, if we just think of the way that we see our practice, people talk about the Triratna approach to the Dharma. They talk about what is it, the five things, integration, positive emotion, you know, the path of integration, becoming more oneself, becoming more integrated, as we say. There's the path of emotional development, the path of ethical, emotional, empathic unfoldment, you know, that all comes about through what we're doing. We call that positive emotion. And then there's the aspect, or the path, you could call it, of, in a way, pure receptivity. Just after a while, you're able to listen a bit more. After a while, you're able to be a bit more open. There's not so much getting in the way of the teaching. That's receptivity. Right? And then there's the aspect of the path that is a collapse of the ego, or the collapse of all our wrong views. About the nature of things. There's a sort of collapse of that. It's as though all the pride we have, the anger, the resentment, all the stuff that's around ego just collapses in a heap, as it were, because it's seen through. It's just seen through. We call this spiritual death, which is not a great term, but it does actually describe that balloon being pricked, you know. That is part of our path. And also, there's a kind of renewal that comes out of that. There's a renaissance that comes out of it, you can imagine. You know, let something as central as those very fixed views of who we are, let all that go, and something new is going to come out of that. A bit like the phoenix arising out of the ashes, or something like that. There's something really, really new can arise, and that is awakening. So those five things, if that's our path, is the integration, the positive emotion, the openness and receptivity, the ego collapse, and the renewal of our being, do we associate that with mindfulness? Well, I don't think we do, really. I think we see mindfulness more as simply awareness. But the Buddha didn't really teach it like that. When the Buddha taught mindfulness, he wasn't thinking. I mean, we have these applications of mindfulness, like the 12-step idea. It applies in all kinds of ways. But the full teaching of mindfulness that the Buddha taught in, for example, the Satipatthana Sutta, that teaching covers a lot of bases, we could say. He taught four foundations of mindfulness. This you almost certainly know. The famous four foundations or establishments of awareness. He said you've got to be aware of your body. You know, we really stress that at the centre, I think. Awareness of the body. Accepting the existence of the body and feeling the body, experiencing it in its full tactile spaciousness, really experiencing the body. And then, secondly, really connecting with feeling, really feeling, just feeling, allowing your feelings to be there is an important part of human development. You know? And everything that comes out of that is a vast area. The body is a vast area. Feelings is a vast area of human experience and human development. Then the Buddha said, you've got to be aware of your mental state. You've got to be aware of what mental state you're in. And that doesn't mean some kind of, you know, at this point we could do a very analytical diagram of, you know, 52 mental events or even hundreds of different mental states which are possible. The Buddha just meant, again, feel it, you know, feel your state of mind, know what side of bed you got out of this morning, know when you're actually resistant to everything and you don't want to be here, know that, or know when you're feeling expansive and a bit of a high, know that. Take that into account when you're practicing, when you're trying to communicate, etc. Just know your mind, know your state of mind. And finally, those are the first three foundations. The final foundation of mindfulness is know what you're doing. Know what you're doing with your mind. Know what you're looking at. Know what you're taking in. Know what data is coming in through the senses. Know what you're thinking. Know what you're feeling. Know the mind objects that are arising in the present moment. This is a really big thing. Just while I've been talking, you've probably been trying to do that a bit, and just tell me how many different thoughts you've had. Just tell me how many impressions you've had. It could have been hundreds, you know, because the mind works so quickly. So I don't know if the Buddha is necessarily recommending that we... you can't stop your experience and see the frames of the film. The mind doesn't work like that. But at the same time, there are particular things happening in our awareness. And this is important somehow to be mindful of that and apply the teaching, apply the Dharma to that. There are particular thoughts, particular assumptions, particular feelings, and particular sense experiences going on. So the teaching of mindfulness suddenly gets incredibly complicated with all these different bits. When it's explained like this in terms of the four foundations of mindfulness, it just seems like it's too much already, you know. So I think a simple overview of the four foundations of mind, I think we can chunk it down just to two foundations of mindfulness, which is awareness of the body and awareness of the mind. You could say that becoming aware of our feeling is the beginning, you could say, of becoming aware of our mind. Because when you start to notice that you feel bit uncomfortable, or you start to feel that, ah, oh, this is nice, some sort of pleasurable thing, you're starting to notice your mind in its operation. So in a way, the foundation of feeling is the start, you could say, of the awareness of the mind. There's a lot of teaching in there. The body awareness, the awareness of body, the awareness of feeling, and the awareness of our mood or our mental state, they're the ground, if you like, of the practice. They're the ground of the real practice of mindfulness. Simply noticing body, noticing the changing weather of the feelings, and noticing the underlying attitude or mindset, you know, that's going through the day, because that's usually doesn't change so quickly, you know. I don't know how many moods you've been in today, but it probably wasn't thousands. Yeah, it might have been three or it might have been five, but it probably wasn't that many. It might have been just one mood, right? But the Buddha taught these as the ground in which awareness is established. Body, feeling, and the mind state, or the mood. And he said, we need to do this in a diligent way. You need to be interested in it. It's something you need to take on, actually. He said, be diligent, be clearly knowing, and in your mindfulness, be free from desires and discontent in regard to the world. In other words, take this as a practice that is more wonderful than ordinary consideration. It's something that can that brings light, in a way, to your awareness. So, free from desires and discontent. Just because something's unpleasant, don't necessarily get angry or depressed. Just because something is pleasant, don't necessarily feel fantastic and great that the world is now going to be endlessly blissful, you know. So, diligent, really, he's saying, to get something out of this, you've got to appreciate it and put yourself into it. With diligence isn't a great word, I admit. Really do it. I think he's talking about really do it. And then clearly know. It would be good if we could be clearly knowing what's happening in our body, in our feeling, in our mood. I know this is quite a high expectation, but we can do some of this. We might be able to do it quite a lot, actually. It's always a question of just starting and carrying on. This bit about freedom from desires and discontent in regard to the world, I'm quoting from the ancient 2,500-year-old sutta, that is what can come out of the ground of awareness. You have this ground of awareness, which is a kind of embeddedness in our experience. When you have a certain embeddedness in your experience, you can let it go. You can take it less seriously, or you can see it more as it really is. Insight, which is what it is, it's an insight aspect of the mindfulness teaching, has two stages, really. There's a kind of a withdrawal from clinging, frustrating states of mind. Withdrawal from what in Buddhism is called attachment, which is a bit of a code word for a fixed relationship with the things around us. So letting that go, that's one stage. And the next stage is really seeing the nature of things in everything. That's like direct seeing of reality. How am I doing for time?
Oh, yeah.
Talking about these things, it's as though you circle round and round again and again and just get more awareness of it, really. I mean, in a way, that's it, that's the teaching. And you've probably heard it before, but because we're focusing on our minds on it right now, tonight, you can probably see a little bit more in your experience how it could work for you. How can you relate to it? What do you find not quite clear? What, etc. We can go into that, some of that, in a minute. But just to, in a way, summarise. That's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to summarise what I've just said, and I'll put it in another way. The Buddha talked about experiencing these things on the inside, from the inside. We experience the body from the inside. So experiencing the particular touches, actual sensations, actual movements. Experiencing that from the inside. And then also experiencing it, or observing it, better word, from the outside. And it's the same with the feelings. You're not just... you have to experience and feel your feelings. You can't... but then you can also look at them from the outside and observe them as well. You see the difference. And it's the same with the mood. You're in the mood, and so you experience it subjectively, but you can also look at it, as it were, from outside and experience it, observe it, better word, from the outside. And you can see that happening in yourself, and you can realise that it's happening in everybody. Everybody is having the same, not the same experience at all, but they're having experiences in the same kind of territory. They're all feeling something. They're all in a mood. They're all they all have body experiences. So know that, and also know that with their arising and passing away. Notice that all of this stuff that's happening is in flux, it's in a flow. This is a wisdom element, because to see that it's like the weather, you know, it's all very evanescent and changing. Seeing that frees you from getting too stuck in it. That's the wisdom aspect of it. So, with the body, we experience it and observe it. We notice, the Buddha talks about its anatomy. You know where the different parts are, where the nose is, where the heart is, where the bones are. We have a sense of the anatomy of the body. It should be elemental, so you should feel the different textures. So there's a kind of earthy part, there's a liquid part, there's a heat part, there's a moving part. These are the four elements. There's just different ways into the experience of body, the tactile experience. That's why he says that. Notice it's perishable. There are lines developing on the face. You know, it's different. The hair is coming out. You can imagine when we die, it's going to be like the compost. You know what I mean? It's like the whole thing is perishable. This is part of the experience. When we were born, we were so smooth, and you know, later on, we're, you know, like an old prune. You know what I mean? So that's the body. You know this. It's true, isn't it? You know, this is what it's like. Okay, I speak. I do speak for myself. That's all right. It's perishable. It has a perishable nature. Notice it when it's breathing. The mindfulness of breathing practice is the entryway into practice of mindfulness, in a way, because, again, it's inside and outside. It's movement, it's warmth, it's the elements doing their thing that make up the body. And then it's postures. You know, I'm sitting like this, you know. Maybe you're sitting like this, I don't know. But there's a posture. It kind of indicates, it doesn't matter what it indicates, but it's all meaningful somehow. There's the posture. Standing up, sitting down, lying, sitting. Standing up, sitting down, lying down. We're doing, that's right, the body is something we're doing things with. We often think of our body as a kind of machine to get things done. I'm going to, I need to go to Oxford Street, I need to buy this, I need to go and talk to somebody, I need to do this. And we think of our body as the machine to do things with. We get very irritated when it doesn't work and things like that. It really, that is an attitude to the body. That is not what the body really... The body is more than that. The body is also a teacher, for example. The body is also... It's a result of all sorts of things. And we put it as a result of what Vesin first started. It's much more interesting than a machine to get things done. So there's a lot of teaching we can get from the body, and that's just the body. In terms of feeling, the Buddha talks about feeling. Feeling is when something is painful. That's a feeling. The feeling is when something is nice and it's pleasant. It's the feeling tone of our experience. And the feeling tone of our experience is something that we react to. So when it is painful, we feel horrible, or maybe a little bit horrible, maybe a little bit uncomfortable, and emotions come up. There's a reaction to that. We want to do something so that horrible thing won't be happening, for example. Or if we see that horrible thing maybe is coming on the horizon, we might have an emotion of fear or an emotion of anger, for example. All the feelings that we have produce these reactions, but the reactions are, to a small degree, controllable. We can actually train ourselves not to get irritated just because there's a particular thing in the room. If you see what I mean? The emotions are trainable to some extent. The feelings aren't really. The feelings are just a given, in a way. What's in the room is in the room. What we feel about it, maybe our feelings will change over time. But right now, that thing feels horrible. So we can't help that. But we can help the emotional response. So there's a kind of training there, and the Buddha says something quite interesting about that. He says there's not only pleasurable and painful feelings. He says that some feelings have a potential to be liberative, and some feelings have a potential to get us more stuck, as it were. So, for example, not every painful feeling is bad. Not every painful feeling is something to be avoided. Some painful feelings we can really learn from. For example, I don't know why I'm thinking of this, but there's the painful feeling of having hurt somebody. Okay, we say something, we really regret saying it. We really wish we hadn't said that thing. It's really hurt that person, and it's just messed up our relationship with them, at least for a while. That feels very, very painful. And it's not that the pain is good, but at the same time, it's something we can learn from. It's something we can out of which can come an emotion of, I'm going to change. I'm going to change that kind of. I'm going to improve, basically. So the Buddha talks about using feeling to train ourselves in an ethical way, using the signals of feeling to practice the precepts, basically. So not all pleasure is helpful. Some pleasure is very, very addictive. Like, well, I'm not going to come up with any examples. you can come up with some examples. I mean, some forms of pleasure are highly addictive, and some forms of pleasure are really helpful to us. You know, we need to acknowledge both. There's the forms of pleasure which we could, if we cultivated more of, we would become happier. Some forms of pleasure, if we do that a lot, we're going to become less happy. It's quite interesting. So the Buddha talks about this area. Maybe this is the kind of thing they're going to talk about on that 12-step weekend. It's that area of what takes you down and what can open you up in terms of feeling. So feeling is a really big area for a training. I think I've said enough, really, for one night. I think I've touched upon all the main aspects of the teaching, including the wisdom aspect. And I would like to have just maybe 10 minutes for a bit of discussion before we go downstairs. So I'll stop there.